You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I am Andrew Wiebe. No, I'm not in New York. I'm in Vacaville, California, still with my partners in soccer. Reaching out to you from afar, Kaelin Carr, Matt Doyle, David Goss. What's up, guys? How you doing?
Canada Day is up.
Oh, didn't realize that there was going to be that much excitement, but I am now very excited about Canada Day.
I call it Dwayne De Rosario Day to you.
Yes. I think it's D-Row Day has a better ring to it, but that's neither here nor there.
If how about Marc-Anthony K-Day? K-Day.
K-Day.
I like that too. Yeah. Pretty good, right?
Nice. Yeah.
Well,
nice.
If you know off the top of your head when Canada Day is, it is on Wednesday, July 1st. We are releasing this on Thursday, July 2nd, but we recorded a day earlier because Dave had big plans or something. He wanted a free weekend to do nothing in Brooklyn?
Let's go into that. What are you doing, Dave?
Yeah, I'm going to Cooperstown, New York.
Ooh.
The home of baseball, to sit in a cabin and have fires and play games and hang out and drink maple syrup. It has nothing to do with baseball. But it turns out that everyone goes to Cooperstown all summer for Little League tournaments. There are no Little League tournaments, so houses were very cheap.
Oh, there you have it. Little trick of the trade from David Goss. We got a big show today for you. Mostly
interviews. I'm glad you're profiting off of the loss of Little Leaguers. Jeez, Goss, come on, man.
Oh, their summer is ruined, and Dave's just kicking back in a cabin. Oh, why are there so many bunk beds in here?
Taylor's just really upset because he's living in a 1970s basement, and Little League is the most precious thing in the world to him.
He's now just lashing out. It's true. Yeah.
I love the lamp. Look, we got a big show. Some interviews coming your way. Chris Wondolowski will be with us from the bubble in Orlando, joined by Caleb Porter, the head coach of the Columbus Crew, of course. And then we'll finish up with Aaron Schoenfeld, new center forward there in Minnesota, to talk about his move from Israel to MLS and all his experiences in between. It's some crazy stories in there. But we got to start with this, because this is really going to be the big breaking news, I should say, with MLS, really over the course of the next month plus. MLS did confirm on Wednesday, July 1st, that six FC Dallas players have tested positive for COVID-19. Two of those six were positive immediately upon arrival at the host hotel in Florida. And then additional four players tested positive within the last 2 days. So they tested negative, those four, and have now tested positive. All of those guys immediately put into an isolation area of the hotel, which you know all about from our episode with Dr. Margo Patukian, the chief medical officer for Major League Soccer. No other members of the MLS delegation at the host hotel have tested positive. So six positives of 392 people, all six of those from the FC Dallas delegation, and no other club, according to MLS, has been in contact with that delegation since they arrived in Florida. So that was sort of the scenario that had been worst case, that a team has an outbreak within it, and we will have to see what happens with this and how they handle it and what happens going forward from here, as well as all the other teams that are going to come into Orlando. So that's the state of things right now. I don't know that there's any non-awkward, weird way to transition off of that news.
I always say is, like, just hope all the players and the staff are safe, and that all of them who have been infected, that it goes quickly and without complications, because health is the most important thing here. So fingers crossed for that.
Yeah, I think that was well said. Health and safety over everything. We're thinking about the folks in that delegation for FC Dallas and all those players who have tested positive. Let's just, I guess, plow ahead here. It feels wrong to do so. MLS's back tournament is coming July 8th. The bracket challenge is now live. Bracket.mlssoccer.com. We will put the Extra Time League out there. $10,000 first prize, $1,000 for second place, and $250 for third. There are two stages, one for the group stage, where you're basically predicting who finishes where in the groups and who moves on to the knockout round. And then once the knockout round is set, there will be another stage where you make those picks. So you don't have to make the whole thing now. just the group stage. Let's assign some groups or choose some groups. Tell me how they're going to finish. What do you think, Doyle? You got Group E, Atlanta United's group.
Yeah.
Red Bull's group. Hell is real group. Who you got winning this thing? Who's second? Who's moving on?
I think that Columbus are the favorites in this group. And I know they didn't play great to start the season, but they have two things, right? They have the ability to sit deep and counter, which they're excellent at, especially I think with Diaz on that right flank, and then Jossie always makes the right run and does it at a sprint. And like Jossie is a proven goal scorer now, so you have that. And then in Zellerayan, you have a number 10 who has already shown once this year that he can win a game for you. So I like what Columbus have in terms of being an uncomplicated team. They have some depth, but a clear first 11. They have one or two guys who can change the game coming off the bench. And that, you add in a veteran defense, and like that to me seems like a really good formula for this tournament. Whereas the other three teams in the group are just question marks.
Right? Are you going to troll Atlanta here and not have them finish second? I'm just waiting for the inevitable moment. I'm basically on the edge of my seat waiting for when you say.
No, I think Atlanta finished third in this group. I think that Atlanta's, like, Joseph Martinez, over the last 3 years, has had the best three-year run of any striker in MLS history. You could argue his 2018 season was the best season in MLS history if you factor in what he did in the playoffs in addition to what he did in the regular season. And last year, 2019, he might have been even better and more important, because that team, they were a mess in the middle of the year. And then he scored in, 17 straight games? He picked them up and he carried them emotionally, and he carried them obviously in the box score, and he's the one who gives the team their shape. And I know they have talent behind him, and there's a chance that Ezequiel Barco and PT Martinez and Rosetto all live up to it and make this look stupid, but I just can't see a way for Atlanta without Joseph Martinez. I can't. And so second place, it's not going to be the Red Bulls, actually. I'm picking FC Cincinnati in second place.
Yeah, knew the troll was coming.
No, not sure. No, I'm not trolling. Like,
no, FC Cincinnati would never.
FC Cincinnati showed promise in those first two games. Now, obviously, they have been a disaster off the field. They've had to make so many stops and starts, but if you look at that talent on that team, they have in Jurgen Lacadia a $20 million striker. They have in Alan Cruz and Frankie Amaya two young midfielders who can cover a lot of ground and cover for Sim De Jong and Harris Madunian. They have Yuya Kubo, another DP forward. There are going to be questions about the defense. I'm not picking them to win at all, but I think this is a team with a ton of firepower who could go out there and punish Atlanta and punish the Red Bulls and give Columbus a game, which they did last year. So I think it's Columbus number one. This is the Ohio group. Columbus number one, Cincinnati number two, Atlanta number three, and then the Red Bulls number four. I know the Red Bulls already beat Cincinnati once this year, but they're so questionable in terms of what they do in the second half of games, and that has been consistent over the past 18 months. So, yeah, I guess this group ends up the opposite in a lot of ways of what most people would have it as.
No Josh Sims as well. He is back to Southampton. Josh Sims, we barely knew you. It was like, yeah. Omar Damari-esque, like comes in on the DP loan and then whoop, 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 he is gone. Dave, what about Group D? What are you thinking?
Group D is a tough one. It's one of the groups where I think any team could get out depending on the form they have. I think RSL has the most question marks coming into it. So you look at SKC, who played well the first two games of the season, have brought in Pulido. They have depth and they have experience, which I think is going to be huge in a tournament like this. They can possess the ball and control the game if that's what they need to do. And I think they can also defend as a unit and use Johnny Russell and whoever else is playing on the other wing as an outlet if they have to counter. So I think SKC gets through. And then you look at Colorado.
Did they won?
What?
Are they first?
Yeah. They're number one.
Okay. They've also been together the longest. They've been training together the longest, which I think is like one of those pretty large details that's really going to matter here.
Sorry, did Weeby mansplain Doyle's group to him? Or is that just...
Oh, boy. Just trying to make an addition.
Do you
want to
go now?
I was trying to make an addition.
Group D? And then I'd say after that, Colorado. I like the way they're built. Robin Fraser, the ideas they have. And obviously, we've talked 17,000 times about them scoring off set pieces and their ability to threaten teams in a tournament setting where you know exactly what you need in terms of goal differential, results, last 15 minutes of a game, you're pouring bodies forward. They've got a lot of options in that. And then I think Minnesota is going to be really mad at me for this, and I'm kind of okay with it. I know we had this discussion a week ago or something about Minnesota and where they're at, and you guys felt like they were closer to the team they were last year than I do, which is I think that the attack has to change so much that it's not a ton of continuity. They have that continuity in the back line and in defense. So I think Minnesota has a shot to be they're going to be the third place team. I think they have a shot to get out as one of the best third place teams after that. But yeah, that's how
my face is burning in embarrassment from the mansplain drag. It hurts me.
You're good.
I got to get out of the way now. Kaylin, I continue. I'll give you a free 2 minutes and I won't interrupt at all. Okay.
No, it's okay. I had to bite my tongue with this FC Cincinnati pick. I was sitting there myself being like, if Yachtstam on like two handfuls of practice can come in and beat the Atlanta and the Red Bulls to go through, that would be quite the coaching performance there.
Hey, weird things happen, man. It's 2020.
No, hey, we are learning that for sure. So I'll go ahead and, you know, I think most people, when the groups were announced, looked at Group F and said, the kind of obvious choice. I mean, everyone's got Circle del Trafico. They want to watch the match. I understand that based on the history between these two clubs, the short history, but I guess entertaining one for sure. So most people have kind of penciled them through, but I don't see it that way. I do feel that LAFC clearly is the best team in MLS. You know, if Charlie Candle is still there, and it sounds like from the reports I'm reading that he will be. We don't know necessarily everybody who's going to be in attendance or who isn't, but with the way that team plays, the way they're built, and the institutional knowledge that they have from Bob's system, I think that's going to be able to, I just think of like, how quickly can you turn the lights on in a tournament like this? And that's one where I think they will go through and go through on the top of that group. After that, I really think this is wide open. I don't think it's an obvious answer at all that the LA Galaxy are the next logical pick to go through just from watching them in person. Week one against Houston Dynamo, who they will also be facing in this group. They just looked lackluster. They didn't look like there was many ideas. They couldn't figure out how to get Chicharito the ball in good spots. Pavone, of course, scored a brilliant goal. I think he can always find a moment of magic. But again, with the Galaxy, it's still, the system hasn't really taken shape. It's really waiting for moments of individual brilliance, and they don't have the big man that they did last year to do that. So more of that will fall on Pavone. The Dynamo, I think, has some advantages just based on understanding the heat, the humidity, and I think they have a good energy within the group. But I think Portland is the second team for me to go through. And we've seen what Savarese can do in a tournament setting, in playoffs, throughout his career, even before taking over with Portland. I really like, of course, the front attacking group that they have going for them with Blanco. I think Jeremy Abobasi will have a big role, hopefully. And then you always have Valeri and Chara. So a nice spine there, and they're good in this type of setting. So if I were to pick it out, I would go LAFC, Portland, Houston Dynamo, and I think LA Galaxy still have a lot of work to figure out.
And look, they don't have Jonathan Dos Santos. That news is just dropping here. Hernia surgery. So like, he is one of the sort of, he's a linchpin. Like, you take the linchpin out and this already sort of rickety contraption might just kind of crumble to the ground. TBD, we shall see. But I think I'm with you, Kaylin. I don't think the Galaxy get through. I'm taking the group of chaos, as Doyle coined it, Group A, six teams. Because I'm out here making guarantees about Dom Dwyer and trying to embarrass myself with Orlando City picks, they're finishing third. They're moving on. They're getting through. They got to. So I have some self-respect. And then the top two.
I like that Weeby takes the group of chaos and then starts in the middle. So next they have to tell us who finishes fourth.
I had to do the all six. What's the point? They're not even going through. They don't even matter at that point. Look, the problem is no idea where you're getting from Nashville. No idea where you're getting from Chicago. I don't enter Miami, like, they don't get LGP now because you can't have TAM players and DP players sign and come in. I don't know what they're going to get there. I don't know if they can score goals. So all those guys, you guys just fight it out for fourth, fifth, and sixth. Don't care. Doesn't matter. It's only one through three that matters. And I think the top two are the two most talented teams that have actual continuity and a plan. And that's Philly and New York. I'm going Philly one, I think that they will come in and be more prepared in that moment. And I think that they're maybe better suited to sort of just like grind things out. And then you got El Seno. So, you know, let's get to the 80th minute and then just bring on the cheat code and see what he can do. And they have a lot of goal scorers up top. They may not have all been consistent last year, but every one of them has a chance to hit a heater. And I think I really like Kasper Schabilko, and he's healthy now as well. And then two in New York City, they move on. Both have a great chance to make long runs. But for me, Philly, New York City, and Orlando, and I'm riding Dom Dwyer all the way, baby. So that's where I see it. Can we talk Jürgen Dom, though? Let's real quick, before we get into these interviews, Jürgen Dom, does it matter? Is it a big signing for Atlanta? They announced him. He will not play like LGP and MLS is back. But instead of like the hat thing that LA did, they went with the, you know, like old microfiber blanket that he lifted up. I don't think that was club sanctioned.
I think he went rogue, full his own TikTok. I think that was a whole other thing.
Happening. Yeah, it's got to be. That's personal content because I have that same blanket sitting in my in-laws' living room right now. Like, yeah, it's like the 10-year-old blanket you got for Christmas. They're like, ah, whatever. You know, I guess I'll use that someday.
His dance moves too. Very, very weird.
Very weird.
I'm in no position to criticize anybody's dancing, so I thought it was cool.
Okay.
Do you think the signing is cool?
No. I mean, Jürgen Dom is real fast, and he runs straight, and he never added much else to his game. I guess because they play that 3-4-2-1, that's kind of what you want from a wing back, but it seems like a lot to spend on a wing back who's never actually lived up to his potential. Now, maybe the change of scenery helps. I think everybody agrees that he has talent, but he's never really brought that to bear week after week after week. If it was me, I would rather have Julian Gressel. So.
And they have Brooks Lennon, Dave. We were sort of talking about this before.
Yeah, where he fits in.
Yeah, like
if they're going to play with wingbacks. He's never played that position before. I'm not saying he can't, but how much is he worth to you at that spot? And then you've got like five or six different wingers. He's not, I guess this is the easiest way to put it. He's not a Tito Vialba replacement. He's not a guy who can play anywhere across the front line. He's not a guy who's really going to create opportunities by himself. So I think Doyle put it, he's a straight line runner with decent touch. There was a hope that he would develop from that, take that and then become, you know, an elite creative player on the wing, and that never happened. If they got him for a good deal, which is kind of what we're hearing about with LGP, of like things are weird right now, and if you can get a guy, get him in a salary cap league and then figure it out, because his salary could be an asset you could use around the league, or maybe Brooks Lennon's available, something like that now that you can do some things with. But this is not a Joseph Martinez replacement. It's not a Tito Vialba replacement. It's not a Julian Gressel replacement. I would agree with Doyle. He's not as versatile. He doesn't fit in as cleanly at any position, all those types of things.
Definitely doesn't cross the ball as well.
Yeah.
That's been one of the big knocks on Jürgen Dom over his career, is that he just, for a guy who plays wide and is really uncomfortable sliding centrally, he's not an effective crosser of the ball. It's a weird signing.
Yeah, we'll see what it means. We don't have to worry too much about it during the MLS's back tournament because he won't be playing in that. Little final news before we get to Wando, to Caleb Porter and Aaron Schoenfeld. In about, I don't know, maybe I'd give it 5 years, we're going to have some elite defensive midfielders in this league. Juninho retired, went straight into the LA Galaxy Academy alongside his partner, Marcelo Sarvas. And Shawry Joseph, the legend, the heartthrob of David's life, is then now in the New England Academy as well. So this is what we need, baby. We need those guys training up our defensive mids of the future. I'll leave this to you, Dave, because I know you feel some type of way about Shawry.
Yeah. Three amazing players, jacked about all of it. Although I'll say this, Shawry had Granada playing, I think, the best in their group in CONCACAF Nations League as a head coach. So the fact that he doesn't get a look as an assistant or even a first team coach in MLS straight off the bat, when other players who have zero coaching experience get that opportunity, I think is wrong. But New England has not had a good academy. It has been something that Kurt Anolfo has talked about consistently. Adding a USL team has been a big part of that. They've signed a number of players. So if you're going to change things, this is a great guy to go with, who was a versatile player, who read the game well, who controlled the game, who was a part of the best teams in your club's history. And when you watch his Granada teams play, like, in settings where it was hard, fields were bad, travel was poor, they played soccer. They tried to play out of everything. They wanted to play with the ball on the ground. They had a belief of who they were, and then they dominated every team that came in front of them. So I'm really excited to see what he does, and hopefully this means if he's going to stick around, he can finally come on ETR.
I know. I played phone tag with him again like 2 weeks ago, and he was like, "Oh, I got training, man." I was like, "Well, I will get you again someday." Shawry Joseph, story time right here. Someday, I will get to hear Dave talk about CONCACAF actual games happening, because just that little snippet got me jacked. Let's throw it now to these interviews, starting with Chris Wondolowski, then Caleb Porter of The Crew, and Aaron Schoenfeld. We'll be back in a second. All right, always a pleasure to have him on Extra Time. Chris Wondolowski, the Goal King. Chris, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Enjoy being on. Enjoy seeing you guys again.
Yeah, good to see you, too. Be real, man. I saw the ugly sandwich photo. I do like a rye bread or a pumpernickel or whatever that was. How's the food?
So I went with a turkey on brocio. I mean, to be fair, though, you get a sandwich. You're getting turkey and you're getting bread, but that's your 24-hour quarantine meal. And the lunch, definitely isn't nothing to write home about. But the rest of the meals, all of our team meals have been together after that. Once you get out of the quarantine, they've been solid meals. They've been good. And it's getting used to it, but it's still been nice down here.
Good to know you're well fed, man. Have you seen, I'm sure, the news going around with FC Dallas? And this was sort of what we all knew could happen and what would happen, which was eventually positive tests. What do you think about that news personally? Do you feel safe? How do you feel as far as the bubble goes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have kind of mixed emotions. One, you know, as a team and kind of being the captain of the team and knowing how all of our guys have gone about, I think that we've done the right things and have gone the right ways about it. And I think the leagues have taken the right protocol. And I do feel safe being in this bubble. That being said, though, that we do have people in the bubble now that are having positive tests. And so that kind of, I don't know, that deflates the bubble. So, I don't know, that's kind of my whole scheme of things. We need to get it down out of it, and so that's the first and only step we kind of need to take. And the teams coming in need to make sure that they're safe and making sure they're hitting all the right protocols coming in here. And they're not easy. We've taken tests. I've had my brain tickled more than a few times now, and so it's not a fun test. But you need to be done, and you need to get it done.
This is much bigger than an individual, and we all know that. And I think a lot, I'm actually in Northern California right now, and my wife is expecting 3 weeks from now from that. You have a family. How difficult was it for you to leave your family? What did you have to do to feel comfortable with that decision?
Wow, it is a very difficult decision. It is extremely hard, and it comes down to having your family, and especially when that comes down. So sometimes it's nice to be an individual and have your individual family to take care of. And some have different circumstances. I'm very lucky. I have an amazing wife, two great kids who are crazy, but she knows how to control them. And I've had experiences being gone, and she's unbelievable with that, and also has family around. Her family is there, and my family as well. So it's nice to have a support system to have in place there. And I know that she really appreciates it as well. And other guys don't have that, though. And it's they don't have that luxury. And it's dire at times. And it's tough for the people when you leave your families at home. And it's always tough on the road.
You guys are the first team in the bubble because you couldn't train and you wanted to get down there and start working. For the teams that aren't there yet, for people that haven't come in, what's your advice on what to bring, on how it operates, on, you know, how the whole thing goes down?
Bring water, stay hydrated. I think that's the biggest thing coming in. It's hot down here. I think it's been in between 90 and 100, both in temperature and humidity. And so down here for a week. So it's definitely a warm one. That being said, bring as much little things as you can to keep the time. It is actually very nice, though, to catch up and to bond with your teammates. We've been down here 1 week now, and we have three different rooms that are player rooms. And so we're able to play cards and we all chipped in. We got this pretty cool dartboard. So we've been having dartboard tournaments going on, and they've been it's going to be interesting because they're loud right now. So I'm wondering when teams are coming in, if we're going to be getting noise complaints or how that's going to be taken care of. But it is actually kind of fun, though, catching up and playing poker and cards with all the guys. It's fun bonding in that sense.
Who's the hustler? Darts, cards.
We actually have a few guys all over. Danny Hosen is definitely the best dart player. We have some guys. Fiero, though, we have some guys that like to take action, though, and so we have a few guys that like to get involved, and so I would say there's probably about 10 of us that whatever game it is, we're ready for whatever it is, darts, poker. We have this little foosball like flicking game. It's fun.
What scares me is we've seen you celebrate goals. To see you do like hit a good dart shot, have darts in your hand, and go full Wando, that to me is that's warning sign.
See, I actually keep good composure. It's after when I make sure no sharp objects are anywhere around me before I start my celebrations or start adding in anyone else in my celebrations.
Oh, here we go. Whoa. Got him in here. Kaelin with the flow. Carr.
Hello.
There's some flow. Okay.
Welcome, Kaelin.
How's it going, guys? Thanks. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. I didn't know, you know, the Zoom logins, it takes forever these days. So, but I don't want to keep Wando waiting at all. This guy, I mean, I'll have
Kaelin,
to
we were just
later.
About to talk about the best soccer players in Bay Area history. So,
Kaelin, Kaelin was an absolute legend. I have amazing Kaelin stories, and I've told a few of them, and I will always tell them. Kaelin was the best by far on our team. We grew up playing together, and definitely the best on our team.
All right, give us a good Kaelin story. Give us a good one. Come on.
I mean, always my favorite Kaelin move was that he didn't like to head the ball. But at the same time, he has amazing hops. So he would jump in front of the defender so high that the defender would lose sight of the ball and Kaelin would duck at the last second. And the defender would see it, and then he would just spin and he'd be gone. And that was definitely like one of my favorite Kaelin moves. And it was good. It worked.
Yeah. I don't know how we didn't win State Cup. People ask me that all the time.
I do take personal blame. Actually still gives me, I saw Noah play golf with him. He still gives me blame for that. So,
yeah. Well, it's all right. Yeah. People ask me all the time, by the way, they're like, so like Wando at the time, was he like, did he just become this amazing, you know, all time goal scorer later in life? And I'm like, nah, this dude scored every game like clockwork. It just was just always a knack for the goal. So I saw it. People will say, oh, like what a surprise, but I saw it from day one. So
10 straight years now, 10 straight years of double digit goals. Maybe my worst professional moment was predicting that Wando would not hit double digits.
We're just getting started.
I owe you credit, Weeby. Like, I owe you a lot of credit, to be honest.
Now you're just needling me, man. But I saw a quote from you. You said, I'd kind of like to leave the door cracked on retirement. It looked like 2020 was going to be the last year of Wando.
Yes.
Now this happens. This is different. Stay with us, Wando. Don't leave us.
Yeah, so I was kind of talking to the wife and I had a full tank and I was ready to give it out all 2020. And, I had many scenarios played out in my head. I thought I had the best and I thought I had the worst played out. I did not have this. This was actually something I did not have pegged. And I had many other scenarios, to be honest, but this actually wasn't. But that being said, it's pretty cool that we have this tournament. We have a tournament that you get to win a Champions League berth, and it's a special tournament, and some that, you know, we're competitive, we want to win, and if things go right, I'm still planning on going out in 2020, but I don't know. Hey, you know, I just wanted the door not necessarily cracked, I'm just leaving it unlocked at least. Gotcha. I'm not locking the door.
You can walk just, through it if you wanted to,
just keeping it at least still closed a little bit, so I have to make sure I can still move by the end of this tournament as well. I think that's also key.
I mean, we've been watching The Last Dance over this time, so I think it's like, you know, maybe you step away, does he not step away, he comes back.
A little baseball.
Kaelin comes in, does the documentary of the final season. I mean, I can see it work. I can see it happening.
I like that. I like that. I like where you're thinking there.
That's, yeah, you got a producer on your side. Before we get to, I have to ask this one, because I was wondering what you would do during your 2-year break. And I was guessing it'd either be golf or basketball, because I hear that's what you do in the off season. Who's the best basketball player in MLS not named Chris Wondolowski?
One I've seen personally, it's Ike Opara. He's got skills. He's got good handles. He can actually D up really well. I know that's a shock. He's actually really good at defense, but he can. He's a really good basketball player. I need to give him credit too. That's actually just killing me inside. Just actually giving him credit that he is a good basketball player, but he is.
Yeah, he locks you up, huh? All right, tell us about the soccer side. Tell us about what it was like not being able to train together, at least, and where you're at with Mateus and his system and everything it demands of you with that heat, with all the crazy conditions.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely difficult. You know, we had a very regimented plan and we had a program that to the looks of it, I believe everyone followed. I know I did. I know many of the guys did to a T, because we knew once the ball was rolling with Mateus that it wasn't going to be we're easing our way back into it. It's full cannonball into the deep end with Mateus. And, you know, it's something that I love about him. And, you know, even Orlando, too, as soon as it was tough in San Jose, we had about a week, 10 days where we got to kind of do basically it was individual training. We had parts of our own field, like a quarter of a field where we got to dribble and do fitness. And and the sad thing was we were all excited to do it because it was so long till we were back into it. And so once, you know, I think it's all kind of worked into Matias' hands, because once we came down here to Florida and we got to play 11v11, everyone's been kind of ready to go. And it's been exciting. We're still working our way into getting everyone full 90-minute fit, and I think everyone will, but it should be fun.
Wando, in those moments where you have individual sessions, I think you know your game and your strengths at this point, but when you're focusing just individually on your game and preparing for this tournament, what are some of the things that you focused on?
Some of the things actually that I do focus on are especially my touches. You know, we're working on dribbling a lot of, especially when I'm tired, just keeping the ball close, using all parts of my feet, just keeping the technically sound when I'm in there. And then also just no mistakes. I know I've always said I've never been the strongest, never been the fastest. So I better be accurate. I better be, you know, I better be precise with what I do, precise with how I play, and better be clean with it as well. And so always trying to work on that and perfect that as well.
You said that you would like to work with the academy after whenever it is that you retire, door open, door closed, door cracked, whatever. And I hear you talk about that individual side and how you've maximized your ability. Let's say I'm pushing you into the academy right now. We've got a crop of young goal scorers or young attackers or young whatevers. How do you pass your information on? How do you pass what you've built over the years on? What will you focus on?
Oh, well, I mean, I think that the one thing that I feel comfortable is being in front of goal. And so I would work with them and be in front of the goal. And something that has always helped me and has kind of given me an edge is that taught me was get to the first post. If you get to the first post before a defender, more times than not, you'll be able to get to the ball first. And, you know, if the delivery's there and you have good teammates, and I'm lucky that I have good teammates, get to that near post. If you beat the defender there, the ball will be there. And Kaylin knows, John Spencer harped that into us. And, you know, that's something that always stuck with me. And that's, I don't know, the first thing that would work with them is movement on the box. And I wouldn't have them taking shots from 25 out. I would have them, you know, from 12 and in. And just being precise, being, you know, clinical in there and not having a driver into the net. I call it a hybrid, you know, you're not chipping it, you're not driving it, you know what you're doing with the ball, and you can still hit it hard, you can still hit it firm, but put it where you want.
Is it natural for you now, just sort of reading where the ball is going to go? Because when I think about you, and I'm a huge Dennis Rodman fan, I think about Dennis Rodman, the rebounder, because like he knows where that ball, or the spin, the movement, he knows where it's going to end up when it comes out of somebody's hand. Do you feel like in the box, you just know? You don't have to think. As soon as you see a cross, as soon as you see movement, you're like, it's coming here. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, I really do believe that there's some kind of just instinct that I do. I feel it. I know where it's kind of going. I think that I am very lucky in my ball perception, depth perception, and being able to kind of judge where it's going right off the foot of a cross. And also, yeah, just being able to study my teammates. I know their tendencies. I know way they plant next to the ball, where that ball is going. And it's just, so it's, yeah, I mean, it was really cool. Like we mentioned watching The Last Dance and watching Rodman, it is a science. It was really cool to see him break it down. And it really is kind of a science that sometimes I take for granted.
Close you out on, if San Jose Earthquakes wins the MLS's back tournament, why will it be?
You know, I think that we actually have a great depth. You know, I think that 1 to 28, 1 to 30, we have guys that can just step in and know the system and be able to plug in and out. And with a tournament like this, I think that that's crucial. And I think that there will always be yellow card accumulation, red cards, injuries. There's going to be tired, you know, especially down here. You're going to need the whole team. And I think that we have a great 11. I think we have a great 14, especially with now 5 subs. I think we have a great 16, but I think we have a fabulous 30. And I think that's going to be a crucial thing coming late in this tournament.
All right, Wando, your honor. That's what I think I'm going to call you based on you know, the goal king. We got to like get the red carpet out, make sure you feel properly appreciated, right? It's great to talk to you, man. Good luck down there. Stay safe.
By the way, I just want to add, I have Wando's jersey from the first goal he scored. We traded kits that match.
Wow.
So I'll give it to the National Soccer Hall of Fame one day.
No, Kalen, that's the retirement plan right there. Yeah. That's know, eBay. Right?
That's my 401k.
Best of luck, Wando.
See you, dude.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate that.
All right, let's talk to the head coach of Columbus Crew SC, Caleb Porter. Caleb, welcome to Extra Time.
Take my mask off here, guys. Being safe. Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. Good to see your face. How is life in the bubble, Caleb? Walk us through what you're doing day to day, how you feel, the experience.
Yeah, it's actually been giving us good peace of mind over the last several days. This is our third day now. And, you know, first impressions are everything, right? And the first impression was really good down here. And it gave our players, like I said, great peace of mind. As soon as we got off the bus, everything organized, right into the testing, and then right into our rooms. We knew we were in our rooms quarantined until we got the test results back. And we were able to order room service from there. And then obviously once we got the test back, we were able to train. So we trained that evening. And then we've been in a rhythm. And really the only difference I've seen, and we're trying to make it as normal as possible, is everybody's wearing masks and you're getting tested. That's really the only big differences of being in the bubble.
All right, let's talk about what you can control. You're a team, the Columbus Crew. Caleb, I picked you to win on every platform we have been on. Video, in print, David Goss put it up there, Columbus Crew, my picks. And then you come out and you say, I look at it and it's the first three games are the most important. And then the next four games in the knockout stage, it's an open cup. Essentially, we could win this tournament, come back and get injured and not make the playoffs. That would be viewed, in my opinion, as a successful season. Caleb, you're killing me here. I wish you had told me this before, but what are we supposed to take from that? And what does that mean for this team?
Well, I didn't say we didn't want to win the tournament. You know, we do want to win the tournament, but I think you have to look at it as really two situations, because if you're going to have the first three games count towards something different than a tournament, then of course you have to approach those first three games, you know, with the understanding of, you know, what does that mean for our group? And especially coming off of a long break, you know, it's really important that those first three games, everybody understands that it's a part of the big picture of the regular season and, of course, our priority of winning MLS Cup. So, you know, the good news is the best case scenario would be 9 points, which would mean we'd have obviously a good position going into the four games after that. And we will approach those games just like we do an Open Cup. We never try to lose an Open Cup. We want to win an Open Cup. We want to win every round in an Open Cup. I just thought that that was a good analogy because ultimately it's very similar. What's at stake, CCL, prize money, all those things. And so our group's definitely down here to win it. But when we get out of the group, for sure, we have to look at how our group's health is and how we manage, especially that first game, because it's pretty quick after the group stage.
Can I ask you, Caleb, what changes in your mindset from what we know and what you know in a regular season in a normal world? And this, can your team in July of 2020 play the style of soccer you thought they were going to play in February and March? How will the five subs change the way you think about tactics or man management? I mean, what is different in your mind now that you would have never had to think about prior?
Well, it'd be naive to think that it's not going to be different. It's going to be different. You know, there are a lot of considerations that we have to think about. You know, being off, only having, you know, a shortened amount of time, full team training, the heat, the game times, the time in between games, you know, all those things, even the psychology of just kind of being here, you know, it's different and it's new for everyone. None of us have been in this situation. So you have to embrace that it's different and new. You have to every day think outside the box. You have to, I think, challenge yourself and the staff to think outside the box and to make the right decisions every single day. It's not like a normal season where you've pretty much gone through it. You kind of have your way of working. You have your patterns that you go through. You know, it's different. And so we've, I think, done a good job trying to think about everything and factor in our preparation, factor in how it's different. You know, for example, we came down a week earlier than we had planned because we felt it was really important to get a friendly game in. You know, I couldn't fathom going into a regular season game if really points are at stake for a regular season and an MLS Cup of playing our first game without playing an opponent. And so not saying that's going to better prepare us than anybody else, but in our considerations, we felt like that was really important to come a week earlier. And so we made that decision. We are training at night down here. We feel like it's really important to kind of get used to an evening rhythm and getting up later. And ultimately, we feel that's an important decision in our preparation because a 10:30 game is not a game time that we've ever played in. So we need the players to get used to that.
Not just a first regular season game coming up after a layoff, Caleb, but against a rival. You're an Ohio guy. We are not. We don't know this as well. Explain to us what the hell is real rivalry means and maybe what this Disney MLS is back tournament version of it will look like.
Yeah, it's really important, this rivalry. It's bragging rights in our state. You know, when you look at the two communities, Columbus and Cincinnati, there was already a bit of a rivalry. Forget, you know, the MLS teams playing each other. And so when now you put your team into that situation going against, you know, their team from their city, it's massive for everyone. Of course, you know, the supporters, but it's important for us as well. And we had a taste of that last year. It was really fun to be a part of. Obviously, we had the better of it, but they're going to have, and I told the players this, they're going to have a bit of a chip on their shoulder. They have a new manager. They've spent some money. They have some, you know, really good players that they've signed. So their roster's improved. And the psychology always, when you're the team that didn't win the last one, it's an easy motivational piece to be able to say, hey, let's get these guys back. So we're aware of that. I think it'll be a good game. You know, and also you factor in it's the first game. So no team, you know, is going to be perfect in that first game. No team's fully ready probably for 90 minutes at the level you want to be at. You've got these five subs. We don't know completely what Yopstam's going to do in terms of putting his team out. So there's some mystery there as well. So it's going to be fun. We'll do what we always do. We'll plan for what we know, and then we'll be ready to make adjustments.
Can I ask you to be direct about the five subs? As a coach, as someone who studies the game and has to make these decisions, when you saw that rule change, what went through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good thing under the circumstances. You know, when you're playing games again where you're coming off a big break, it's important that you have those extra couple subs. Immediately when that rule change was implemented and you saw it happen in the Bundesliga, you know, my thought was it's going to change halftime subs. You know, when you look at managing kind of rotations and loads, you can pretty much do three subs, you know, and know you still have your two subs, tactical and match state, that you would normally make. And so I think there are going to be a lot of halftime subs with three, sometimes maybe even four guys coming in where pre-plan it and you know, okay, I'm gonna start this way and then bring on these three or four guys at halftime to change the game.
When you think in that, you know, in terms of your ability to change your team more, does that change? So often we see this guy only has 35 minutes in him, so he comes on in the 65th minute. Does it this give you the option to start a guy like that and maybe then take him off at halftime?
Yeah, I think you look at the three games and you look at the opponents and you look at each game individually, but also the game that's next as well and how you're going to determine who starts the next game, who rotates in the next game. So, you know, when you look at the three games, there's a lot of planning, not just for the first, but the second and third. Because you know in that second game now you have the third game quickly around the corner. So, you know, you'll be able to kind of also predict with teams maybe what's around the corner when you see who they start, who they bring on in the first and second games.
Lucas Zelarayán, we have to ask you about this guy. I mean, it was going to be, I thought, a pleasure to watch him week to week, and then it got taken away from us like so many other players. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you were part of the process of scouting and bringing Diego Valeri to Portland. You know, a little something about Argentine tens. Take us inside the process with Zelarayán. And if you can, if it's applicable, is there a sort of MLS equivalent that fans here might be able to say, okay, his style of play, the way he sees the game, what he'll do in Caleb's system looks a little something like this?
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, I was a part of the process of signing Diego Valeri. It was one of the first signings that I had when I took the job. I really feel in my game model and my philosophy that it's important to have a number 10. You know, I know it's getting, in some cases, lost in certain systems, but I think it's a key to how my teams, the vision that I have for my teams. And so you look at Diego Valeri and how we played him. You know, we knew in losing Pipa, which is a big loss, obviously great player, did a lot for the club, you know, that we needed a true number 10 to come in. And it was a great process. Myself, Pat Onstad, Tim Bezbachenko, our director of scouting, Neil McGinnis, and Issa Tall. It's a collaborative decision. You know, we're not going to sign a guy unless we all sign off on him. Of course, there's the budget piece. But from my standpoint, the vision that I have for the team needs to come into play, which is very important. But I think in Tim and Pat, we see the game very similarly. So it was a really easy decision. And we needed a guy that could score goals, you know, and create goals. And we needed a guy also that could help in the buildup, you know, provide that, you know, the brains of our team. But then also on the other side of the ball, we need an honest player. We can't have a luxury guy. So it's not an easy player to find. But when I first saw Lucas Zelarayán, when he was presented, and then I flew over to watch him train and I met with him in person, I knew that he was the guy. And he hasn't disappointed. He's a great player. He's a good pro. And he brings all those things. He checks those boxes.
No doubt Darlington Nagbe is your guy. You know, based on the reporting, Caleb, you guys wanted him a full year in advance. You went out and spent the allocation money. I'm not going to call him your security blanket, but it feels sort of like it every step along the way, you guys find a way to be together. So what? Every coach has their guy. We know that. What makes Darlington your guy? What made it so important to get him to Ohio? What has he changed for you soccer-wise?
Well, there are a lot of guys around the league that I've coached that are my guys, you know, that I've enjoyed working with. So one of the things I always say when I bring a player, just because I've worked him in the past doesn't mean I'm bringing him because I know him and I've worked him in the past, because there's a lot of other players that I don't choose to bring that I've worked with in the past. With Darlington, he's my guy because he's one of the best midfielders in the league. So first and foremost, if I never knew him, I would want him on every team I coach because I think he's the best rhythm midfielder in the league. The analytics show that. Your possession numbers go up, which we all know possession for possession's sake means nothing. But when you look at his front half possession numbers, his ability, you know, to maintain rhythm, tempo in our team is second to none in the league. And he's also an underrated defender as well. He doesn't do it with tackling, but he does it with positioning. And so I think if you ask any coach in the league, they'd probably want Darlington Nagbe in their midfield. So I'm no different.
I think that's fair. That's what we're going for, Caleb. We wanted to hear that he's the best rhythm midfielder in the league. And boom, delivery. All right. Thank you so much for your time. We know you got to get going, get to training. Stay safe. We look forward to seeing you guys in that first game in Hell is Real.
You guys coming down here or not?
Oh, man.
Nah, we're leaving the space for you.
Yeah. Too crowded for you. It's too crowded for you guys. We'll stay here. I got a kid due in 3 weeks, so not for me.
We'll be on the front lines here. No problem. All right, guys. All right,
thank you,
Caleb. Take care. All right.
All right, we finish up from Orlando with Aaron Schoenfeld of Minnesota United, signed in this offseason. Big Celery, do you mind if we call you Big Celery?
Fine, you can do whatever you want. Let's go with me.
Where did that come from? Can I just ask that? How does that happen?
I could give two stories, but I'll probably give you the truth for one. I just had a terrible haircut one time. And we had this media guy who was covering the crew, and I guess some fan had written me on Twitter. I came in the locker room steaming. You know, I'm like, how dare this guy call me a piece of celery? And then the guys in the locker room just erupted. And it was probably the worst thing I did. But in hindsight, it's pretty funny now.
Yeah, that's one that you try to keep on the low. You get mad, but you don't tell anybody.
Young, you know, at the time.
Yeah, it is what it is. So I watched, I'm seeing the guys in Dallas. What's the experience like? How are you keeping it loose? Do you feel safe? Who's the guy who's kind of keeping you guys up?
Yeah, you know, obviously all the stuff with Dallas is coming out. You know, I don't know too much about their situation, but down here, I mean, our group, we feel safe. You know, it hasn't been bad. We've mostly been gaming the whole time. We have playing Warzone all day. I don't know. It's not bad. I mean, we know the situation isn't great. We're just trying to make the most of it. But yeah, I mean, hours and hours and hours of gaming right now. So
my
eyes are probably a little sore.
Yeah, no, I tell my kid, the more you watch TV, the more your eyes are going to hurt. So maybe take that. He's 2.5, but how did you get to know your teammates in the short time that you had? Because you're there, then you're gone, now you're back. It's not like you've been in this team for 2 years.
Yeah. Obviously, Ethan and I, we put together a lot in Columbus 4 years together. So that was pretty easy for me to come to Minneapolis. Having him there is like, you know, my kind of go-to guy. But, you know, it's a great group. You know, I'm really close with Tyler, Robin, Brent. You know, it's a really tight group overall. A lot of the young guys are all bought in. You know, it's probably the most collective group I've been a part of in a long time.
Why Minnesota? Why MLS?
Why did I come back?
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably could have stayed in Israel for a while, but I felt it was a good moment. You know, I had a good offer from Minnesota, and I was coming at the end of my contract in Tel Aviv, and, you know, I wanted to get closer to Abby, and yeah, I felt it was a good fit for my situation.
Why did you go to Israel? I mean, I know that the crew, you were like, you were coming off the bench a lot, you were starting some, you played down to us a little bit with Dayton. But kind of take us through that decision-making process when it happened. Where were you as a player, as a person? Why was it right?
So, I was, all the Israel stuff kind of started coming up in October of that 15. And we were going in the playoffs. That was the year we made MLS Cup. And I just wanted, I knew Kai was there. Kai was scoring every game. And I knew I wouldn't get a lot of minutes coming forward. And so I just wanted to go somewhere where I could, you know, consistently play and, you know, try to make a name for myself and just really give it my all. And so I ended up getting a call from an Israeli agent. You know, he said, you know, with the law of return with Aliyah, you can come. And I kind of thought, not at first it was a joke, but it kind of became more serious and more serious. And I was actually in Key West after the MLS Cup with all the guys from Columbus, you know, doing our thing down there. And they kept calling me. And I'm like, all right, if you book a flight, I'll get on the flight and go. Anyways, I went from Key West, I had a carry-on suitcase and flew straight over, and, you know, things just kept turning and went to Netanya. They were offered me, but they were cash strapped, so the plan was to sell me, and was sold after 2 games there, and then went to Apollo, and just things kept turning and turning, and I think I scored like 10 goals in those first 12 games, and then all the stuff with Maccabi started taking place, and you know, it just all worked out like better than I ever could have imagined.
We'll get to the heel turn of Hapoel to Maccabi in a second, but the life of Tel Aviv, living on the beach, Netanya on the water versus Columbus, that was a sell for you? Shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Netanya, had been out in the snow in Columbus for those last 3 months, and I was like, I thought I was in paradise. I couldn't believe it. And then, you know, I was signed in Netanya, and I took one trip to Tel Aviv one afternoon, and I was like, oh my God, it's like fantasy land in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
Anyway, I ended up getting sold there, so I was so happy at the moment.
So,
hold on, I gotta ask. You scored 10 goals in 12 games. It's like you explode on the scene, man. You're like, your life changes overnight. Like, what changed?
You know, I think a lot of young Americans, especially attacking players in this league, you have a lot of foreign guys coming in, a lot of DPs. You know, it's pretty hard to get confidence, you know. You know, pretty much no matter what, unless you go in and score 5-6 games in a row, pretty hard to be a consistent starter as an American attacking player. I'd say the 9 or the 10 position. And I went there, okay, I had a little bit of luck. I went to a pole, my first touch ever for the club, I scored a chip on Maccabi in the Derby. And, you know, and something like this just ignites you, you know. And from there, I remember feeling every time I was in front of goal, if the ball would come, I would score. And I was just like in that kind of form, you know. And I wouldn't say I played my best soccer, but just in front of goal, I was, you know, so sharp and so, I don't know. And I want to say on fire, but I don't know what the right term is. You just felt so calm and confident every time you got the ball.
I remember seeing your name in headlines and seeing the goals and being like, whoa, Aaron is doing this. So that's on the field. Tell me, though, off the field, when you score 10 and 12, you're in Tel Aviv. How did your life change, like day to day?
Well, it's a little different over there. Soccer players are essentially the basketball or NFL players here, you know, and everyone knows who you are instantly. And I remember even when I signed at Apollo, before I scored a goal in the league, people would stop me on the streets, and it was new to me. You know, in MLS, even if they know who you are in the American culture, it's pretty rare that someone's going to go out of their way to say, like, hi to you. So I remember in these moments at first were so surreal. I'm like, how does everyone know? Like, I don't understand. And, you know, it's just such a different culture. I don't want to use the word idolize, but just so many kids look up to you, and you're just kind of such an impact on the entire culture there. And I was just playing soccer, and I don't know, that stuff was so, I don't know, so crazy to me. Even looking back right now, I'm kind of like mesmerized that actually was real.
So I lived in Israel a long time ago. And when I lived there was the 1 year Hapoel won the title, and all my friends are Hapoel fans. So they would drag me. It was 2010 to like Aaron Zahavi's first. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm unfortunate to say they would drag me if I didn't drag you for going from Hapoel to Maccabi, because that's all anyone wanted to talk about when I told them we were going to talk to you. So
it was pretty brutal. I remember making this transition. I was pretty scared. I didn't understand really the ramifications of everything I was doing.
Going from good to bad, right? That's a good way to describe it. The good guys to the bad guys. I mean,
it depends on whose eyes you're looking at, but it was kind of like the sacred thing you weren't really allowed to do. And, you know, I was fully committed to leaving. And when I made the decision, there was no turning back. But I remember when there were some lawsuits going on between me and Apoel, but, and they like came to my door, they spray painted my house on the outside. I mean, I wasn't sleeping at home for probably at least 2 weeks to a month. I remember I was staying at friends' houses who weren't, I don't know, that somehow they got my address. And so the ultras came, all the stuff was spray painted and all that.
What's the moment when you were like, oh, this is real? Like, was it the spray paint? Was it the lawsuit?
I remember,
I
remember, so we did a team thing. I was with Apoel, and I had a lawsuit coming, and I knew after the team thing that the lawsuit was coming at like 12 was the time that the suit was getting dropped. So I was with the team in the morning, and I had just had, you know, it's just a big moment. Everything's about to change in your life. And I remember in that moment thinking like, this is crazy. And when that lawsuit hit, you know, I just turned my phone off and I drove up to Netanya to a family I knew up there and stayed for a couple of nights. And then, it was crazy.
Would you do it again?
Yeah. I love Maccabi. It was the best 3 years of my life I spent there playing. It was, I don't know, the people involved in that club, I'm like so thankful and fortunate, from everyone, from like the kit men or to the chefs, to everyone, the fans. And it was some of the most unbelievable people I've ever met.
Then you choose to come to Minnesota now. Tell me what you see when you walk into the squad and how you maybe compare the level that you were playing at in Israel to one that you're seeing in training now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, MLSL was really high. I would say the main difference I saw, the roster at Maccabi was so deep, you know, because all the European runs we would have, and you had to have 24 guys because there was 65 games a season or something going on. So just there was so much depth, but the players in MLS are obviously really high level. The American game has grown so much. You know, me and Ethan were just having a conversation, just how much the league has changed from when we came in the league in 2012 into seeing the growth of clubs and just the commitment to American soccer to develop players and to, I don't know, just make the game grow. I mean, even think about our situation in the bubble right now. In 2012, would this have been possible? I don't know. But just a big growth in American soccer.
You mentioned Abby Dahlkemper, and she's currently playing over in Salt Lake City, NWSL Challenge Cup. She's about 2 weeks ahead of you in everything she's doing. Yeah. What did you see from her preparation? What have you heard from her experience that you're trying to bring in to yours in Orlando?
I don't know. I mean, if we can go back a bit, I mean, we were training together a lot in the off season. And so they've been preparing for a while. The team she's with, they're full go. They have a great coach and everything. But I mean, she was working hard when we were still doing the small group training. They were in full team sessions. So we were talking about that, how funny that is. And they're in their situation's a little different than ours in the bubble. Their teams in NWSL were split up. But yeah, it's tough. They're playing at altitude right now in Utah. She said it's tough. They're just trying to make the best of the situation like us.
As a couple, do you guys talk about soccer a lot? Or is it sort of like, let's get away?
You have a little mix. I mean, you'll come back from training, you'll talk about the session. But it's not like all day. We're not talking formations or tactics or anything. But, you know, the normal, the vent from the session, how'd you do? I mean, was it a good session? Do you feel good after? But yeah, we're not getting too tactical.
So you mentioned the shock of being, you know, a celebrity in Israel, which you didn't experience in Columbus, really. She's a celebrity on a different level than basically anyone in MLS, right? She won a World Cup, all of that. What's it like to watch that? What's it like to be around that?
I'd say, you know, she's as normal as anyone is. You know, she's just like any of us, so humble. She's worked for everything she had. But to watch her play, to see the person you love and care so much about win a world championship, that was, I don't know, like it, I almost brought me to tears. Just to see, you know, the dream of every young soccer player, boy or girl, it's always to win a World Cup. And to see her do that, it was, you know, it left me speechless. And just to see what goes on behind the scenes during the quarantine, especially, you know, I had time, we were training together, and just to see how hard she works and to see like how hungry and how much desire she has, it's, you know, makes you, you know, love and care about the person even more.
You know, the fans of the women's national team and certain segments of it are, as we all are about this game, obsessive, but also obsessive about players. Yeah. Your Instagram, I haven't gone and checked it. But did you get an uptick in followers? Have you felt like you've, as someone, let's say, close to the program, had some more eyeballs on you than maybe in the past?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I get tagged in a lot of her little fan pages, which is pretty funny. But, I mean, it's really cool to see the following she has and to see, you know, especially any national team player, boy or girl, the love the fans have for them.
You know, Aaron, we need more national team players, so... Just saying for the future.
Open to it anytime. Open anytime. Happens.
Last one for you,
Israel,
man. You
got a US. I don't care.
You got a competition on your hands here. You're one of three deep, basically at the forward position with Adrian Heath. Luisa Maria brought in. You mentioned those DPs that come in at the nine position. Mason Toy, a U23 national team player, and yourself, a proven professional, trying to come in and take those minutes away. What's that competition like, and where do you feel you stand right now?
You know, in training, we're always battling. You know, obviously Luis is a great player. Mason's a great player, but I feel like we all bring three different things to the game. We all can be used in different moments. Each have a different skill set, but you know, it's fun to compete. It's fun being around these guys. Everyone's positive. You don't really have this like bad blood energy, you know, that some clubs have in the competing positions. And you know, I just, you know, hope to help Minnesota, hope to score a lot of goals and do whatever I can to help.
A lot of people would say Group D is the most even group because of basically every team has a shot to go through. A lot of teams that did well last year, SKC, probably the worst season last year, and they're one of the favorites to a lot of people in this tournament. What's the outlook of how you go about these three games? What's the conversation right now in the Minnesota group?
I think it's not going to be like a normal season or normal games. You know, obviously we're on short preparation. You know, we had those couple months off and I think it's just going to be a grind. I think, you know, obviously our group is really strong with, as you mentioned, all the teams, Sporting, and we think, I mean, we've been talking, Sporting was the first team to get back into trainings. You know, they were kind of the go-to of how to get back into full team sessions. So obviously they'll be good, but I feel like we have a strong group here in Minnesota. We have a lot of fighters and I think more of the soccer is going to be fighting than maybe the beautiful game at times from most of the teams down here on short preparation.
Last question, because we know you have to go, but you did come to Minnesota and we mentioned you didn't have a lot of time to get a feel on the ground, but obviously so much is centered around Minnesota and Minneapolis after the death of George Floyd and everything that's happened. What have you learned about that community? What have you learned or felt about your role as a part of it and some of your teammates who have really led a lot of the movements, a lot of the conversation?
Yeah, we have a lot of great leadership in our group. You know, Ike is amazing. You know, we all kind of had a group talk, did a team Zoom call. We spoke about the issues, spoke what we can do to help. But I think the main thing that we all gathered from this is that we're all part of this. You know, we've all of our eyes have been open. You know, there's no more playing dumb. And I think as a whole, as a community, we all have to do everything we can to help in this situation. And I think as a team, we're all united into fighting it together.
All right, Aaron, thank you so much for your time, man. Stay safe down there.
Yeah.
Do some work on Call of Duty. Keep yourself entertained.
No problem, man. Thank you guys for having me.
All right.
Thanks,
take it easy, man.
Take care, guys.
All right. That's it from us, everybody. Hope you enjoyed those interviews. Hope we get more good news down from Orlando. We're thinking about those FC Dallas players at this time. All the news, MLSsoccer.com. They're providing regular updates on the state of testing. Any final thoughts before we get out of here? Anybody have anything to say?
Happy Canada Day. Happy 4th of July.
That does it. All right. We'll see you after this weekend, everybody. Enjoy yourself. Be safe.